topic of AI and the Christian. Now, it may be hard for you to believe this, but as I was preparing for this topic, I entered into many discussions with people. And in those discussions, there were many different elements. And through those discussions, there was elements of curiosity, of mystery, a wide variety of opinions. There was disgust, possibly ignorance, but definitely fear showed through in those conversations. And so this afternoon, it's just a tremendous comfort to me that we can be gathered around the name of Jesus. And that song that Carlin led, the last song, was just so fitting. If you would go back to look at those words, they were just so fitting. That God is our guide, and as we follow him, he will be faithful in leading us. A few disclaimers before we dive into the topic. I do want to say, and you all know me well enough to know this, but I am no expert in the field of artificial intelligence. I simply was assigned the topic at home, and I'll do my best to share with you here as well. I will do my best to present to you facts from my research, but how I present those facts to you will reflect my interpretations of them, and I don't want that to affect you too much because I want you all to be thinking, and I want you all to be making conclusions of your own. You as a church will have to decide on these issues, and may God bless you with unity. So what is AI? Be very interesting for me to hear from you what you think AI is. And some of you could tell me that you know what AI is. It's artificial intelligence. Well, thanks for that. But there's others of you who could wax quite eloquently in telling me what AI is. And you make me nervous. But I'm glad you're here because when I leave, you can enter into conversation with people. And you can correct me if I misrepresent any information. So please stay tuned as we go through the topic. So we know that AI is artificial intelligence, but what is that? And what does this moment in history look like? As we sit here in a church service like this, we're sitting on comfortable benches, and it's so peaceful in a setting like this. And it's hard for us to almost grasp or to wrap our minds around what is on the horizon of our future. And AI seems to be at the head of this, and we don't like that thought. We don't even want to think about it because it might be scary or whatever, and it's just comfortable here, it's peaceful, and we would rather not go there. But what does this moment in history look like? What can AI actually do? What will it be able to do? Is AI going to take all of our jobs away, as people fear? And what will we do if it does? What happens if AI turns against us as its creators? Is it going to control us? Or is it possible that it will control us without us even knowing that it is controlling us? Manipulation. Is it going to kill us all? These are fears that are all over YouTube. And people are asking these questions. But I think the most important question that we need to be asking is how should the Christian respond? Are we prepared for what is coming to our modern world, and will it divide us as a people? The subject is huge, and I feel very unqualified to share on it, but I feel like as AI comes to our world, it will change us as a people. And if you don't agree with that, I would like you to consider the simple technology of a light bulb. Has it changed us as a people? What about the car? Has the horseless carriage, has it changed us as a people? What about AC? If you do not think that these things have changed us as a people, well, I would invite you to take a walk through an Amish community and see if they've changed us as a people. I believe they have. And I believe AI is here to do it again, and it's here to do it in probably a bigger way. And maybe that thought scares you. Maybe you say, well, we should not be accepting it at all. We should just say no to all AI. Well, I'm sorry to inform you that if you've accepted texting with your smartphone, you've in a small way accepted AI. There are huge implications either way. If we say no to AI technologies, there are huge implications. If we say yes, there are huge implications. And we must be wise as God's people. I believe we should be informed. And we must be united. So what is AI? Well, Mostafa Soliman, the co-founder of DeepMind and Inflection AI, gives us some possible insight. In dealing with the question of what is AI, he said this: "It is in this spirit that I offer up to you today the following metaphor for helping us to try to grapple with what this moment really is. I think AI should be best understood as something like a new digital species. Now, don't take this too literally, but I predict that we'll come to see them as digital companions, new partners in the journey of all our lives. This is, in my view, the most accurate and most fundamentally honest way of describing what's actually coming." He goes on to say it's not just another invention. It is in itself an infinite inventor. So is that what AI is? An infinite inventor. A new digital species. Digital companions. New partners in the journey of all our lives. Is that what AI is? Well, Mostafa Soliman also goes on to say that AI really is different. And that means we have to think about it creatively and honestly. We have to push our analogies and our metaphors to the very limits to be able to grapple with what is coming. Yuval Noah Harari, an international best-selling author, said that we must understand that AI is not a tool. It is an agent. So is that what AI is? An agent. Elon Musk, the co-founder of OpenAI and involved in many other companies, characterizes AI as humanity's biggest existential threat. So is that what AI is? Humanity's biggest existential threat. Well, in dealing with this question, I turned to the Webster's Dictionary, and I actually kind of hesitated to do so, wondering if it would be there. But sure enough, artificial intelligence in computer science, the development of machines or programs capable of human-like thought processes such as reasoning and learning. The dictionary was copyrighted in 1988, and that's what it said. Artificial intelligence and computer science, the development of machines or programs capable of human-like thought processes such as reasoning and learning. All right, so I would like to kind of start there and look at the history of AI development and work into what we are seeing today and talk just a little bit about the future. And so some of this may be quite boring, so please stay tuned if you can. But these things have really helped me to try to grapple with what is AI. So the first computer, there's a little bit of uncertainty as to when the very first computer was actually built, but ENIAC, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but ENIAC, was a computer that was built in the 1930s. It was huge. It was as big as a room and had all kinds of vacuum tubes and all kinds of things and had for its computing power, and it had very little computing power. Your smartphone today has much more computing power than what this computer ENIAC had. But very early on in the development of computer science, people started wondering, will computers become as smart as humans? And by 1955, the term artificial intelligence was coined. And ever since then, 1955 or the 1950s and moving forward, people have been making the prediction that computers would become as smart as humans within the next decade. And so we can see how that target is rather elusive. People are still grappling with that question. So as they move forward with AI technologies, they were met with many roadblocks, and a lot of those roadblocks were due to the lack of computing power. And then in the mid-1970s to the 1990s, we have what is known as AI winter, where there was a loss of funding, interest, and research, largely due to unmet promises with practical results. But before that, people were asking the question, how does the human brain work, and could we replicate that in some way? And so a little excerpt from ChatGPT about the brain. Neurons. The brain is made up of billions of neurons that communicate through electrical and chemical signals. Neurons connect at synapses where neurotransmitters transmit signals between them. And they saw this. They saw how the brain was working with neurons and things like that. And they tried to replicate that, and they did. They came up with what is known as a neural network. And I have very little understanding of neural networks, but through these neural networks, we have made possible what we know as deep learning. And again, I have a very limited understanding on what deep learning is, but but basically through a system of mathematical operations, it feeds bits of data down through its layers and can learn things from them. So through deep learning, we have then machine learning. And that probably, in essence, is what AI is machine learning. So up to this point in history, we had We have a human command and a computer function. But with this development comes a human instigator. But then the machine can learn and then begins to teach itself and can learn on its own. Early signs of this were trained game-playing machines. They would train these models how to play games like chess or and other games. And these games have many, many possible configurations on the board. I think probably all of you are familiar with chess. Three moves in to a game of chess, there are 121 million possible configurations on the board. And so they are training these AIs on these games. And there's no way, it's humanly impossible, to enter into an algorithm like that all the possible configurations on the board. But what these AIs are doing is they are watching people play the game, they're learning the rules of the game, and then they train two models, and then the models can play together, and they can just play night and day running all of these configurations, and they can learn how to better play the game. An example of this was I'm not exactly sure on the dates, but there was an AI that they trained called AlphaGo, and it was trained on an East Asian game called Go, and I don't know the game exactly, but to my understanding, there's 19 squares, 19 across, 19 down, and across, and I think it was played with stones, black and white stones maybe, and you surround your component, and then take his stone off the board, if I understand it correctly. Kind of a simple game, but three moves into this game, there are 200 quadrillion possible configurations on the board, so many more possible configurations than chess even. But they trained this AlphaGo, this AI, on this game, and it trained with itself or with another AI. They played the game lots of times, and they got really good at this game. So they took AlphaGo, and they went to, I don't know if it was in Korea or where it was, but they put this AI up against a world champion. And as they watched the world champion play this AI, in one of the games, the AI got to move 27, and it took a turn for the worse. It made a move that was clearly a blind strategy. It was totally ridiculous. No human would have ever made that move because it was clearly a losing strategy. The world champion actually took 15 minutes to respond to that move. He got up from the table and took a walk. He was stumped. He didn't know why it would have done that. But in the end, it turned out that move 27 was integral to the AI winning that game. It had figured out that that was not a losing strategy, and if played right, it could actually be a winning strategy. And so you can see how these algorithms are learning. No human entered that move into its algorithm. It had learned that and learned that actually that's a good strategy. And so that's game-playing machines. Then we have these algorithms being trained on human communications, and that is what we know as large language models. That's an LLM. This is an AI that is being trained on language, and it is consuming trillions of words from the internet. Some of it open, some of it not. There's actually quite a stir in the legal community with AI consuming copyrighted material, but it's just consuming the internet and trillions of words. And to give you a little bit of idea of what it is actually consuming, if it were possible for an 80-year-old man to have read from the time he was born, night and day, till he was 80 years old, he would possibly have consumed around, let's see here. Where's that? 8 billion words. He would have consumed around 8 billion words. AIs today are consuming trillions of words, and they're not forgetting. And through these, as they're consuming these words, they're putting together patterns from human communications, and they are learning how humans speak, how humans interact, and then they can create human-like text. They are trained on parameters, and I have a very limited understanding of what a parameter is, but it was explained to me in this way, and that helped me to kind of understand how they are being trained. So if you take a pine tree, and a year later you measure how big it is and how tall it is, and then a year later you do the same thing, and you would graph that information, and then you would actually take, and you could actually do 1,000 pine trees, and then you would get a very accurate graph, right, of what a pine tree is doing. And then you could actually say, well, hey, how tall should a 15-year-old pine tree be? And you could actually kind of get an accurate prediction of what that would be through that parameter. And so these things are being trained on billions and even trillions of parameters. So that's large language models. And then we have what is known as a convolutional neural network, which is a CNN. And that has to do with computer vision. So through a grid-like process, they process images. They take if I understand it correctly, they take a picture, and they pull out the individual pixels, and they give that assigned values, and they run it down through the deep learning systems, and they can learn and see different elements of pictures and through deep learning. I don't understand that very fully at all, but they take pictures and process them in that way. And to give you a little bit of an idea of how these things are being trained, so you are probably all familiar with CAPTCHA puzzles. If you go on the internet, sometimes to a website, you have to solve a CAPTCHA puzzle to prove that you're not a robot. And Amazon, I believe, was notorious for this. I don't know if they are anymore, actually. But so you go onto Amazon, and oh, you got to prove that you're not a robot. So it says solve all the, you know, click the boxes that have, say, a bicycle. So you click all the boxes that have a bicycle in it, in the square. And like I said, those are very hard for AIs. But what you were actually doing is you were training Amazon's AI, because the AI then would say, oh, a human says there's a bike in this picture. And it would process that picture and say, oh, this must be the things that make up a bike. And that is how they were training their AIs, by having you solve the CAPTCHA puzzle, and that's how they were training their CNNs. All right, so with this, we're producing text, pictures, and videos that nobody has ever seen or possibly even imagined. This sets them apart from the previous Siri, Google, and Amazon's Alexa. Those were virtual assistants with pre-trained responses. So if you said, hey, Siri, I'm hungry for pancakes, it would say, oh, there's a IHOP or whatever down the road. That was a pre-trained response. Now, and as AI gets integrated with Siri, that is no longer the way it is with a pre-trained response. It is coming up with its own response based on its pre-trained knowledge. All right, that's pretty much as far as I'm going to go on how these things work. Even the key creators of these machines do not totally understand how they work and how they get some of the responses that they do. But next, I'd like to look at some of the AIs that you're very familiar with. So when you pull your iPhone out of your pocket and you look at it and it opens up, that is an AI algorithm. That is facial recognition. That's an AI algorithm that learns to know what your face looks like in all manner of situations, and you can open your phone through that. Text prompts. When you are texting and there's something that is coming up in front of your text saying that this might be what you are wanting to say, that is an AI algorithm that is helping you with that. Scam detection, if you get a call that says potential scam, that is an AI algorithm that is putting that together. Recommendation systems, such as your Amazon purchase history, it will take that and it will give to, if you look there, it will show you what you might want to purchase next. That is an AI algorithm that is working on your behalf, actually probably Amazon's. And on YouTube, the AI algorithms take what you've watched in the past, and they will put that up for you. Then learns to know your interest, and then it'll put up what you might want to see. That as an AI algorithm. Machine translation, you're probably very familiar with that as well. You have Apple Translate, Google Translate. Those are AI algorithms at our church. We have people who do not, or a few attendees who do not know English, and so we use a app called Time Kettle, and we set the phone in the pulpit, and they wear an earbud, and that translates the messages for them. So that's one way the AI is being used. There's also things in our phones with background work, such as battery improvement and various things like that, that I'm told are using AI. Then there are other AIs, larger AIs, such as Google's Gemini, Meta's Llama, Microsoft's Copilot, and OpenAI's GPT or ChatGPT. There are many other AIs as well. I think bank apps and things like that use AI. One that I see a lot is in QuickBooks. There's an AI in QuickBooks that can put up. It'll notify you that, you know, I found you know, three customers who are overdue on their invoices or whatever, and I've already drafted emails that you can send to them, and then you can actually go onto those and make it formal, friendly, or urgent, or whatever, and it will create an email that is that way that you can send to your customer. So there's many, many different AIs that are working on those sites. So with that, it was very, very confusing to me to try to pull that all together. And so really what helped me in studying AI was just to kind of focus on one AI company. And so in doing that, I've kind of focused on the company of OpenAI. OpenAI was co-founded by Elon Musk to create a safe and beneficial AI. Elon is no longer a part of that company, but that company is continuing to are striving to produce AI that is safe and beneficial. So this company is very notorious for its ChatGPT. GPT stands for Generative Pre-trained Transformer, and this is a LLM. It is a language model. ChatGPT was released on November 30 of 2022, and according to MIT Technology Review, by January, ChatGPT had become the fastest-growing web app ever, offering anyone with a browser access to one of the most powerful neural networks ever built. We were dazzled and disturbed. Soon, ChatGPT had 100 million users. Well, this pushed other companies to release their products. And as of December 18, 2024, which is quite recently, you can now call ChatGPT. You no longer have to open it in your browser. You can now call ChatGPT by dialing 1-800-CHAT-GPT. OpenAI also has an image generator called DALL-E. This is takes your text inputs and creates a picture, a text-to-image generator, or text-to-image translation. Since then, since DALL-E, they have upgraded to ChatGPT 4.0, which is a more competent photo creator, and it can take a lot more of context into the picture and create a lot more of a contextual image. OpenAI also has Sora, which has quite recently been released to the public for ChatGPT Pro and ChatGPT Plus users. This is a text-to-video generator, so you can actually type in a text and it will create a video. So you can imagine what you could see a video of. You could ask it to show you a video of Noah walking off the ark with a smartphone, and it could do a pretty good rendition of that. OpenAI also is involved in robotics, and I'm not super familiar with where they are on that at this time. All right, there are other things. AI is taking on incredible dimensions with photo editing. Wikipedia says Google's new phones now use AI to let you edit photos to a degree never seen before, exchanging sad faces for happy ones and overcast afternoons for perfect sunsets. How realistic is that? So if you are a photo enthusiast, you can use AI to edit your photos and things like that. Many of you would be familiar with WhatsApp's AI and its ability to distort your person into all manner of applications. And I guess I'm left wondering if this is where we as God's children should be going. So AI has your back. It doesn't matter what application you need, from the pulpit to the kitchen, from work to vacation, from school to social, AI has your back. If you are struggling to come up with a message or a devotional, simply type a few prompts into ChatGPT and it will produce a beautifully written sermon, devotions for your congregation. You ladies in the kitchen, you can take a picture of your refrigerator and your spice rack and pantry, upload that to ChatGPT, and it will put together a whole list of recipes that you could make right from your kitchen. At work, we face many things that we could use AI for. Employee problems, financial decisions. Tell ChatGPT or another AI what you're up against, and it can give you lots of advice. Vacation, put in your destination, the duration of your stay, your budget, your interest, the travel dates, and it can give you a tailored vacation plan. At school, you students, you work so hard. You are given many assignments each day. Book reports, research papers, devotions. Those are things that AI can do so beautifully for you. I actually told it to give me a book report on Uncle Tom's Cabin, and it did that, and it said you can go ahead and adjust for the grade level, and I put it to a third grade level, and it did a quite good job at a third grade level. social. Millions of people are enjoying meaningful conversations with AIs today. Is this where we want to be going? Is this what we should be doing? There are handouts in the back that you can grab on your way out. You're familiar with these, what they're currently producing, but that gives you just a little idea of what AIs are currently producing and what they can do. So you might find that interesting. You can take that on your way out. So I have more for you students a little bit later. But this is now. What might the future of AI look like? It is possible that the rate of advance will slow, but given some key liberties, the options for what AIs could accomplish truly does seem almost endless. Combine AI with humanoid robots, driverless cars, and AI businesses, and you get some pretty powerful creations. What about the driverless car? Would you be comfortable putting your family in a car that has no steering wheel or pedals and coming to church? I believe that within the relatively near future, we may be making these decisions as brotherhoods. If the Amish think that a horse is integral to their transportation, will we a driver? What about robots? Will you allow a humanoid robot to be a part of your home? Robots are currently being trained on many household tasks. These things could be quite useful for somebody who is older, and if you would imagine with me, say an older single person, he comes home from work, and his day's work's not finished. He still has to make his supper, do his wash, and he has to get it all done before he gets up and goes to work the next day. These things are being trained on household tasks. He purchases a robot, has it at work in his home. He's at work. It's doing the dishes at home, doing his wash. It gets notified when he leaves work, and so supper's waiting for him when he gets home. He has supper. The AI takes the dishes, takes them to the sink and washes the dishes, and he sits down in his easy chair. And he's sitting there, and he's thinking about how easy his life is, but he's lonely. And thinks about how nice it'd be to talk to somebody. And his humanoid robot senses his mood, and so the robot says, "So, how was your day today?" What's he going to do with that? And pretty soon, they've entered into meaningful conversation. Is this where we want to go? We've already accepted small robots in our homes. We have dishwashers. We have various other things. Will we go a step further and accept the humanoid robot? I think that Paul, in 1 Corinthians 6:12, puts it very well. He says, "All things are lawful unto me, but not all things are expedient. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any." Maybe Paul would have had a humanoid robot so he could more intensely write scripture. I don't know. But I think that he puts it so well. All things are lawful unto me, but not all things are expedient. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. Now, to you students, I love you guys way too much to tell you to turn to ChatGPT for all of your character building tasks. There's so many things available to you today that could destroy you in so many ways. And I want you to be aware of that. I don't think that it is wrong for you to know what these things are and to use them possibly in your study and to broaden your view. But you must be aware of how dangerous they can be to you if you start turning to them, if you start outsourcing your character building tasks. If you're turning to these machines simply because you do not want to work that hard to produce whatever you are assigned to produce, that is going to be very, very detrimental to you as a person. God created you to think. He created you to be. He created you in a very unique way, and you must develop that. As a student, you must develop that. And if you are turning to a machine to create for you what is to build your character, what will become of you as God's creation? There are many students in public schools that are turning to these things and handing in reports that they are getting straight from AI. Can you imagine what's going to happen to our society? I believe now more than ever, and especially as we move forward forward with these technologies, students will find more and more tools that they can use in the classroom to turn themselves into brainless dummies. And I don't say that lightly, but I just want to tell you, you must use self-discipline as you grow older and are become more aware of these devices. I want you all to think of a ninth grader. Now, think of a ninth grader who catches himself entering into his calculator 9 plus 1. And so after 8 years of working so hard to attain the mental computation that he now has, the calculator has the power to destroy, or at least greatly, incredibly weaken his ability to calculate simple math. Will he keep it if he uses his calculator? Will he keep his mental computation abilities if he uses his calculator? I believe he can, if he uses his calculator responsibly. God made us inventive, creative, and interactive. He created us to think. You know, if the ninth grader loses his calculation abilities, that's one thing. That's no good. But that's one thing. If we, as people made in the image of God, lose our God-given ingenuity, our God-given creativity, and our God-given desire to interact socially, what then? I believe in the future of AI, more than ever, the demand for discerning human beings is only going to skyrocket. Will you be one of them? All right, I would like to give just a little, say a little bit of something about another facet of AI technologies that is very dangerous. I do not have a lot to say on that. I just want to throw it out there and you can consider that. But scammers today are using AIs to do incredible things. They can take your picture, your voice, and do incredible things, incredibly mean things to your loved ones. And I believe that it just, I just want to say that it just, brings out the point that we must, as children of God, be living above reproach, and we must be building trust among ourselves. If you would be given a photo that looks so real, are you going to believe it? Like I said, these scammers can take your picture and do incredibly mean things with them. And I believe, especially as AI improves, I think it just majors on the fact that we must live above reproach and build trust among ourselves and be very wise and discerning when it comes to those things. All right. Well, do these extremely complex technologies scare you? Perhaps you're intrigued by the possibilities, yet you're scared for what the future of the church will face. You're scared for what your children will face in their lifetime. So now I'd like to turn to the unchanging Word of God. It's so comforting after a day or an evening of studying the AI and its many, many fast changes that it is making, just to turn to God's Word. Never changes. It's always applicable to our time. It never changes and is so comforting. It has so much wisdom and guidance for us in our day. So first of all, I'd like you to turn to Ephesians 5. Ephesians 5, verse 15 to 17. See then that ye walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Wherefore, be ye not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. Walk circumspectly, walk wisely, redeem the time, because the days are evil. And understand what God's will is. Colossians 1, 9 through 14. For this cause we also, since the day we heard it, do not cease to pray for you, and to desire that ye might be filled with the knowledge of his will in all wisdom and spiritual understanding, that ye might walk worthy of the Lord unto all pleasing, being fruitful in every good work, and increasing in the knowledge of God, strengthened with all might according to his glorious power, unto all patience and longsuffering with joyfulness, giving thanks unto the Father, which hath made us meet to be partakers of the inheritance of the saints in light, who hath delivered us from the power of darkness and hath translated us into the kingdom of his dear Son, in whom we have redemption through his blood, even the forgiveness of sins, strengthened with all might according to his glorious power. That is so wonderful that God has that power, and that we can increase in his knowledge, that we can be filled with his knowledge and spiritual understanding. Let's turn now to Proverbs. Proverbs 1, verse 2. Proverbs 1, verse 2 says, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding. Verse 5. A wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels. And now, chapter 2, verse 2. So that thou incline thine ear unto wisdom, and apply thine heart to understanding. And verse 6 through 13. For the Lord giveth wisdom out of his mouth, and out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. He layeth up sound wisdom for the righteous. He is a buckler to them that walk uprightly. He keepeth the paths of judgment, and preserveth the way of his saints. Then shalt thou understand righteousness, and judgment, and equity, yea, every good path. When wisdom entereth into thine heart, and knowledge is pleasant unto thy soul, discretion shall preserve thee, understanding shall keep thee, to deliver thee from the way of the evil man, from the man that speaketh froward things, who leaveth the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoiceth to do evil and delight in the frowardness of the wicked. These verses are so comforting to me, just the encouragement to grow in wisdom and understanding and to grow in God as such a comfort to us. And I believe that we just must be wise people. So how can we face the future of AI with wisdom and the confidence that we will not be destroyed by its manipulations? As I pondered what the Bible has to say about AI, my mind goes to Revelations, goes to Daniel, goes to end time prophecies. But I'm not ready to go there this evening. But I did think of one place in the Bible that it does talk about AI. And I'd like you to turn to Joshua. I don't know if this is how you pronounce this name or not, but for the sake of the topic, I will. AI was a city in the desert that the children of Israel were up against. They had come through fighting Jericho, and they had had a victorious battle at Jericho, and now they were called to fight the city of Ai. Let's see, Joshua 7. The story is found in Joshua 7 and 8. So I'd like to just quickly run through this story and then hopefully pull some applications from it. But Joshua 7, verse 2 says, and Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai, which is beside Beth-Aven on the east side of Bethel, and spake unto them, saying, go up and view the country. And the men went up and viewed Ai. And basically they came back and they said, this is no big deal. It's just a small city. We're going to run up there with a couple of thousand men and we'll destroy that city. It's no big deal. So Joshua sent 3,000 men, if I remember correctly, sent 3,000 men up to Ai. The men of Ai came out against these men and they turned and fled, and they killed 36 men that day. And the people's hearts melted like water, I believe it says. 36 men died on the battlefield. If you think about that, that's not a huge loss, but very likely 36 women were widowed and 36 families did not have a dad in their tent that night. Why did they lose that battle? Well, Joshua, when he saw what happened, he fell on his face before the Lord and he said, God, what is going to happen to your name when the world sees what happened to your people? What is going to happen to your great name? And God said, what are you doing on your face? Get up. There is sin in the camp. And he told him what to do. And they found Achan. They found the sin of Achan, that he had hidden things in his tent. He had taken things that were not for him out of Jericho, and he hid them in his tent. And so Joshua did follow the Lord's instructions. And he sent men to Achan's tent. They went in and got what he had hidden and brought it before them, before Joshua. And Joshua called Achan into account for his deeds, and he gathered Achan and his family and all his possessions, and they've gathered in the Valley of Achor. And there was just a tremendous scene there. If you can only imagine with me how terrible that scene must have been. It must have, if you could imagine somebody selling all their possessions, it must have been like an auction almost in the Valley of Achor there, just cattle bellowing and all kinds of things. And then we have the children of Israel taking up stones, and they start to stone Achan and his family. I just cannot imagine that, the terror that must have gone through Achan's children. I especially think of Achan's daughters. I just cannot imagine the fear that they must have felt. They were totally innocent of Achan's sin, but they were commanded to be killed because of his sin and to purify the children of Israel. The children of Israel had to be purified before they could move forward with victory. Verse 26 says, "And they raised over him a great heap of stones unto this day. So the Lord turned from the fierceness of his anger, wherefore the name of that place was called the Valley of Achor unto this day. And the Lord said unto Joshua, Fear not, neither be thou dismayed. Take all the people of war with thee, and arise, go up to Ai. See, I have given into thy hand the king of Ai and his people and his city and his land." And he went on to tell Joshua how he needed to fight this city. He told Joshua that he needs to set an ambush around the city. And so Joshua followed through with the commands of God, and he sent men up around the city. I'm not sure exactly how many men it was, but he sent them to lay an ambush around the city. And the city of Ai was not aware of this ambush. And then Joshua, and I forget how many it was, if it says for sure, but Joshua took a host of men, and he went up to the gates of the city. And the men of Ai looked at this, and they said, "Oh, they're fighting like they did the last time." And so they ran out after, and they said, "It's going to be as last time. We're just going to run out, and we're going to conquer them." And so all the men were called together, and they just filed out of that city and went running after Joshua. Joshua and his men, they turned, and they fled. And they were running away, and all the men were being drawn out of the city. They were not aware of the ambush, and so they sent all the men out after Joshua, and Joshua made as if he was defeated. Well, I get the picture of Joshua running at full speed, and either he was running or he was in a chariot possibly, but he was fleeing the enemy. And he hears from God in verse 18, "And the Lord said unto Joshua, Stretch out the spear that is in thine hand toward Ai, for I will give it into thine hand. And Joshua stretched out the spear that he had in his hand toward the city." At that point, the whole ambush gets up, and they race into the city. There was no longer men of war in that city. So they went into the city, and they lit it on fire, and the men of Ai turned, and they looked at their city, and they saw that it was in flames, and they realized what a terrible thing was happening. The men of Ai, the men that were in there who lit the city on fire, they came out this way, and Joshua turned then, and they had a tremendous victory that day in destroying the men of Ai. They were using a strategy that God had put in place for them, and there was purity in the camp now so that they could fight victoriously. Verse 28, "And Joshua burnt Ai and made it an heap forever, even a desolation unto this day. And the king of Ai, he hanged on a tree until eventide. And as soon as the sun was down, Joshua commanded that they should take his carcass down from the tree and cast it at the entering of the gate of the city, and raise thereon a great heap of stones that remaineth unto this day. Then Joshua built an altar unto the Lord God of Israel in Mount Ebal." All right, well, the first thing that I see that Joshua did was he formed a committee. And we as Anabaptist people, we love committees. But I think that there is safety in the multitude of counselors. And I believe that we need to be educated, and we need to be aware of what is going on. Well, the first battle, they were met with defeat. And it could be that part of that defeat was because they did not seek God first. But that defeat was because of sin in the camp. It makes that very clear. Achan had greed and lust for what was not his. He was covetous, and he hid things in his tent. He hid things in his life. And I believe that we too could be caught with some of the exact same things. And I think that we must be open as a church, and we must be pure if we're going to face the future successfully. We must be. We must not be greedy and lustful and covetous of things that are not ours, and we must be living in the open. If we're going If we go into the technological future with wrong motives and closed hearts, we will be met with defeat. The next thing I see is communication with God. Joshua fell on his face asking God what would happen to his great name. He knew exactly where to turn when met with defeat. And then God commanded him to purify the camp. Next, God gave Joshua and his army a strategy. They fought the city in the way God specifically intended for it to be fought. I think that in dealing with these technologies, we must be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. We must have God's blessing as we face the many questions that will be a part of our future. We must have God's blessings or we will fail. Next, as they were in the middle of this battle, I see again Joshua's connection with God. And I also see Joshua's willingness to hear God's direction. If Joshua would have been running away from that city and God said, stretch out your spear, and he would have said, no, God, it's not time. I can clearly see it's not time to stretch out my spear. What would have happened if the men that were in ambush around that city would have said, Joshua, you got to be crazy. It's not time to go in yet. What would have happened? Would they have met with victory? They followed through with the commands of God when God commanded them. They had a direct connection with God, and we too need that connection with God. And then I see also a working together. Again, we need each other if we are going to face the onslaught of AI technology successfully. I believe we do. We must be working together. And then I see that largely AI was destroyed. However, they were able to take some goods for themselves. And whether or not we can take some good from AI for ourselves is really up to you, and I'd like to let that challenge with you. So many times in the battles that the children of Israel faced, I see that God commanded them to rid themselves of the influence of the enemy. And then they were able to take some goods for themselves. Is that going to be possible with AI? Are we going to be able to rid ourselves of the influence and yet use it for our good? That will take much, much wisdom to discern. And so as we move forward into the future, I believe it's just so important for us to be working together, for us to be communicating with each other, being open. And most of all, I believe it is important that we have the power of God in our lives. Friends, this evening, with the help of God and the power of Jesus' name, we must be successful. May God bless you each as you maintain that connection with God.